Bay, 98-0888CQ, Douglas Mann versus Bankruptcy Estate of Badger Lines. And Mr. Mann, Robert Mann, representing Douglas Mann, will be our first speaker. CQ stands for Certified Question.
May it please the court. I'm Robert L. Mann of the firm of Kohner, Mann and Kalis, representing Mr. Douglas F. Mann, supplementary receiver of Emerald Industrial Leasing Corporation, a creditor of Badger Lines, Inc. Mr. Mann and I are business friends, but we are not related. The subject matter of our appeal today is the question of perfection of a judicial lien obtained by service of a subpoena by the judgment creditor against the judgment debtor in supplementary proceedings. The precise question posited by the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals is, quote, does Wisconsin law require a lien obtained by a judgment creditor who institutes supplementary proceedings under Wisconsin statutes, section 816.04, be perfected, and if so, how is that lien to be perfected? The first Hilde decision, which is the decision by the bankruptcy panel, appeal panel, described perfection as follows. Perfection is a concept used to determine the priority of a security interest against a competing interest of certain parties in collateral. It is a term of art taken from Article 9 of the Uniform Commercial Code, but not defined by it. Perfection refers to that single date or moment in time when the state perfection statute, if one exists, is satisfied and the lien becomes good against other creditors who can no longer obtain superior rights. Section 547(e)(1)(b) of the Bankruptcy Code has defined perfection for the purpose of preference cases. It says, for the purposes of this section, a transfer of a fixture or property other than real property is perfected when a creditor on a simple contract cannot acquire a judicial lien that is superior to the interest of the transferee. The appellees have adopted this bankruptcy definition of perfection in footnote 2 on page 10 of their brief. The appellant has listed this definition in its auxiliary question to that posited by the Court of Appeals. Under the doctrine of Kellogg versus Cowper, the original question must be answered in the negative, and it must be held that a creditor on a simple contract cannot obtain rights superior to a judgment creditor who has obtained his judgment and first served a subpoena to appear before a court commissioner for supplementary proceedings. In this case, we don't have a case involving a judgment creditor against a UCC security interest, or a case involving a judgment creditor against an assignor for the benefit of creditors. Rather, we have a case involving a claim of Emerald Industrial Leasing Corporation, a judgment creditor, with a judicial lien against a hypothetical lien creditor, the bankruptcy trustee. The bankruptcy case was created 105 days after the creation of Emerald's judicial lien. The bankruptcy trustee's rights cannot relate back to more than 90 days before filing of the bankruptcy case under the bankruptcy code. A creditor on a simple contract in Wisconsin must bring suit, obtain a judgment, and serve a subpoena for supplementary proceedings in order to obtain his judicial lien. Because Emerald already has its judgment and served its required subpoena, a subsequent simple contract creditor or a subsequent bankruptcy trustee as a hypothetical lien creditor cannot obtain a judicial lien superior to that of Emerald. This has been the law in Wisconsin since 1879.
Counsel, as I understand it, and I don't really pretend to understand bankruptcy law, as I understand it, the issue is when would a judgment creditor get a lien, perfect a lien? Is that the general question here?
No, that question was decided by the district court in its first decision as of the moment of serving of the subpoena for the supplementary proceedings. And no one has questioned that ruling.
Well, then what is the question here?
Well, the question is whether or not this lien, which is created by the service of that subpoena, has to be perfected, has to have something subsequent done to it in order to perfect it.
All right, I'll restate my question. A judgment lien, a creditor who has come to judgment,
yes.
Right? And the judgment is docketed in the state court.
Yes.
Does that judgment creditor have a perfected lien for bankruptcy purposes?
No.
No.
Not against personal property.
Okay.
Against real property, yes, he does. But
okay.
But not against personal property.
Right. So now the issue seems to me to be, when does this judgment creditor against personal property
mm-hmm.
get a perfected lien? Is that the question?
Well, not quite.
Okay.
The question is whether he has to do more than serve the subpoena in order to perfect.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get at.
But that question is the one that's up in the air.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get at. Judgment creditor is not good enough. You got to do something else than just have a judgment. So the issue then is, what do you have to do?
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that the question? What do you have to do?
Well, the question is, after the lien is created by service of the subpoena, is there any requirement in Wisconsin or anywhere that he has to do something further?
Okay. All right. I'll accept that as the question. And
okay.
Your answer is?
All right. Now,
could I ask, sir, is the Fruhoff claim completely out of this case now?
Say that again. The Fruhoff case is out of the case, yes.
So we can just ignore it.
That's correct.
Now, the reason, as I understand by the appellee, for protecting, or strike that, for having a perfect lien is though that there is more notice given to the general public. In other words, so that there wouldn't be any secret lien holders, as I understand their argument. Do you refute that more notice is not required?
That's correct. But secondly, the facts of the case, which I was going to cover just a little further, indicates that this is not a secret lien.
Yes.
It just wasn't a secret lien. First of all, the order to appear before the court commissioner was filed in the circuit court file, several months before the bankruptcy ensued. Secondly, I'm missing one thing. The most important thing is that Mr. Mann, the supplementary receiver, filed a proof of claim 5 weeks after the bankruptcy action was filed. The bankruptcy case was filed. Mr. Mann filed his proof of claim with the clerk of court for bankruptcy, in which he claimed a lien on behalf of Emerald Industrial Leasing, a lien based upon this service of the subpoena. And all that the bankruptcy trustee would have had to do was look at his own claim list, and he would have seen the notice. And this was in 1992 when he was appointed, and the case wasn't ready for distribution until 1995. So he had 3 years to examine his own records to find that lien. It just wasn't a secret.
Mr. Mann, as I understand this situation, Judge Gordon, in rendering his opinion, relied on two Wisconsin Supreme Court decisions, Holton and Alexander.
Yes.
And certainly those cases would seem to support the position he took, that there has to be perfection and the manner in which there has to be perfection. How do you get around those cases?
Well, first of all, neither case mentions perfection at all. The word perfection, the word creation, perfection of a lien, or validation of a lien is not mentioned in either case. But in the Holton versus Burton case, the rule of court at the time that the case was decided I think it's Rule 28, Section 4, something like that, provided that in the event of a judicial lien, if the notice, if the documents creating the lien did not enjoin an assignment for the benefit of creditors, then it was perfectly legitimate for a debtor to make an assignment for the benefit of creditors. And that's what happened in that case. The debtor, they served him with a subpoena, the judicial lien was created, and sometime thereafter, he filed an assignment for the benefit of creditors, which was strictly within the rules of the court at that time. That rule has been sanctified by the legislature. It's now, I believe, section 128.03. And it says virtually the same thing, except that the debtor only has 30 days in which to make his assignments for the benefit of creditors. And we don't have, but there was no assignment for the benefit of creditors. If you talk about filing a bankruptcy and say that's the same as making an assignment for the benefit of creditors, it was much more than 30 days after the lien was created. So the statutory rule, the rule has now been made a statute, and the statute doesn't apply anymore because more than 30 days have passed. In our brief, we raised this point. We said, let's assume that a plaintiff gets a judgment lien, and he serves an order to appear before a court commissioner. And within 30 days after, or before the end of 30 days after that lien has been created, he makes an assignment for the benefit of creditors. Under the present statute, 128.03, the lien is specifically statutorily canceled, invalidated. And this didn't happen here. Now, the rule in Holcomb versus Burton was, the decision in Holcomb versus Burton was strictly on that rule of court, which is now a statute. And it had nothing to do with perfection of the lien. Now, in the Wald case, there was an action, the final fight was between a supplementary receiver and a bankruptcy trustee. And the court indicated, the Wisconsin Supreme Court indicated in its decision that the bankruptcy trustee had no rights superior to the supplementary receiver. But they don't refer to anything as having taken place in that particular case except the passage of 4 months' time. Now, under the old Bankruptcy Act, the preference statute was 4 months instead of three. When the Bankruptcy Code was adopted in 1965, that period of time was reduced to 3 months. That's why the 90 days is so important in our case. But in the Wald case, the only action that took place was that 4 months passed. And because 4 months passed, the lien of the supplementary receiver was stronger than the, or superior to the lien of the bankruptcy trustee. Now that's how we get around these two cases.
Counsel, is it your position that the lien was created on October 30th?
I believe that's the date, yes. October 30th was the date that the debtor, Badger Lines, was served with the subpoena to appear before the court commissioner.
Is it your position that the lien was also perfected on that date?
It's our position that there's nothing in Wisconsin law that requires anything more than the creation of the lien. So yes, it was in effect perfected, although I don't say that they did anything to perfect it. I'm just saying there's no law that says it should be perfected.
Does Wisconsin law require that an order for appearance be filed within a set amount of time after the order is served?
It is my understanding that it does not. But I believe that court commissioners, as a general rule, will file the order to appear the day after their hearing is filed. And that's what happened in this case.
If there is no set time or requirement of when this order for appearance has to be filed, or even that it be filed,
yes,
how is anyone to have notice of a lien that is created on a specific date?
Well, it's easier to answer the question, how does the bankruptcy trustee in this case get his notice? And I explained that all he had to do was look at his own claim file, and he got notice. But
how does someone who's not the bankruptcy trustee but has an interest know when the date of the lien becomes effective if there is no requirement that the order for appearance be filed or that it be filed within a certain time?
Well, according to the Court of Appeals in the Ninth Circuit, in the Hilby case, they said they had the same argument, and they said that there is no requirement of notification, and if there is a problem with notification, it's up to the legislature to correct the problem. But they also said that the debtor can be asked whether he has been served with an order to appear. They can examine the court files for unsatisfied judgment. They can examine the register of actions to find whether any orders for appearance at a debtor's examination have been filed. And they may ask the judgment debtor's creditors to determine whether any of them claimed a lien at the time the bankruptcy was filed. That's what the Court of Appeals said. And in on page 956, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals said, in any event, our job is not to second-guess the California legislature, but to apply California's lien statutes according to their plain language. Now, the answer is that there were several ways in which the bankruptcy trustee, in this case, could have learned about this lien. First of all, he gets bankruptcy schedules. The schedules are required to list all judgments and liens. The statement of affairs, between the schedules and the statement of affairs, they have to list all judgments and liens. All he has to do is read the documents and see what the answers are. He can learn about judgments from the schedules that are served on him. He can, in this case, he could have looked in his claim register, and he would have filed Mr. Mann's claim, which was filed 5 weeks after the bankruptcy was instituted. That's how he gets notice.
Is there any other area of law that you're familiar with and that creates a substantive right, like a lien is? A lien is a substantive right. That creates substantive right at the time of service?
At the time of service of the
servant, like you're arguing here, that the substantive right is created at the time of the service of the order for appearance.
I cannot say that I know of any, but I can tell you that the U.S. trustee who wrote the brief for the appellees has stated in his brief that he couldn't find any such law. And the Court of Appeals, Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, specifically said there's admittedly no Wisconsin case on point. And the answer is, I don't think, I haven't found any such myself, but I don't believe that there is anything in the Wisconsin rules that require that such an action be taken. We can't find a case either talking about perfection or non-perfection, but we have found that there's no Wisconsin case defining perfection. There's no Wisconsin case or statute requiring perfection, and there's no Wisconsin case or statute setting forth the manner, the place, or a time for perfection.
Exactly what would perfection, what would that be in your mind's eye? What would that be?
The answer to the question, if we take it from the brief of the appellees, is that perfection has to be the appointment of a receiver by the court commissioner, or the making of a turnover order by the court commissioner. Now, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals talked about those two things and said, we don't think that either the making of a turnover order or the appointment of a receiver by the court commissioner is going to make the judgment any more public or noticeable than it is when it's already filed with the clerk of court. And so there is some mention in the appellee's brief that maybe we should make a rule that the receiver has got to take possession of the assets before he gets a lien. But the point is that there is no such statute. And what is being asked, in effect, they need a statute. They need some kind of a rule that requires subsequent perfection after creation of the lien in order that they can win this case.
Mr. Mann?
Yes.
On October 30th, there was the order to appear before the court committee. But as part of that order, there was an injunction or a restraint.
Yes.
On the debtor with respect to the transfer of property.
Yes.
What would have happened if the debtor transferred the property after receipt of that order?
I would assume that something similar to what happened in the Alexander versus Walt case, an action by the supplementary receiver for fraudulent conveyance. That's what happened in the Walt case. There was an action for fraudulent conveyance brought by the supplementary receiver. And I think that's what would happen if the...
I mean, can you get the property back?
Sure. And in the Hilde case... In the Hilde case, the bankruptcy trustee, this is the second case decided by the Court of Appeals, the bankruptcy trustee sold assets, and the bank, which was the judgment creditor in that case, sued the bankruptcy trustee. And in the, although he won the case in the bankruptcy court, he lost it before the bankruptcy appeal panel, and then he got a reversal and won the case again in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So he sued the bankruptcy trustee who sold assets and refused to turn over the money.
Could the bankruptcy trustee utilize the restraint on the property to somehow recapture that? So you have the judgment creditor obtaining the order to appear.
Yes, okay.
So the judgment creditor has some rights.
He's got a right.
Can the bankruptcy trustee ever rely on the same order to recapture property?
Well, I would assume that if the bankruptcy trustee had been appointed within 90 days of the service of that order, that he might have. But in this case, the bankruptcy action wasn't filed until 105 days after the order was created. And therefore, he was too late.
Would it be fair to say that the existence of that order, in this case, helped to preserve the property that the bankruptcy trustee now wishes to distribute to somebody else?
No, I don't think so. I don't think there was any preservation. No one could do anything. No one could do anything with that property except the bankruptcy trustee or the supplementary receiver. I don't think anyone else had any rights in it. So I don't think that the bankruptcy trustee's keeping the property preserved it in any way. He's ready to distribute the property to other people.
You misunderstand my... Never mind. Go ahead.
Mr. Mann, I've got an additional question. It's my understanding that our supplementary law is based on the New York statutes, and it's further my understanding that the New York case law on perfection is very similar to the position taken here by the trustee. Do you agree with that? That's correct.
Let me say this. The New York law was apparently, and we have no authority that says so in any of the briefs, but apparently New York was the source of a lot of Wisconsin laws in 1845 when Wisconsin was created, That law was changed in 1868 with regard to this type of lien and the creation of a lien and the reference back of the lien. And there is no reason in the world why Wisconsin should have adopted in 1868 a different law just because New York changed their law. And the answer is that the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals has indicated, and I've got to wind up because my red light is on, but the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals has indicated that I've lost my point. I'm sorry.
You have time for rebuttal over here.
All right.
Colbert does. Thank you, Mr. Mann.
Thank you.
Mr. Burns, you're representing the bankruptcy estate of Badger Lines, and you're from the U.S. Trustee's office.
Yes, I'm John Robert Burns, assistant U.S. trustee. The U.S. trustee is a office created by statute that is in the U.S. Department of Justice. Our duties involve various administrative functions that used to be direct functions of the bankruptcy court, but by statute were delegated to the executive branch, and I perform some of those. The specific reason why I'm here today is because in some of these appeals, an issue arises where the actual panel trustee in a case like this, if he loses, is required to turn over all of the assets to the secured creditor. Thereby, he would not receive any compensation, which would make it difficult for him to obtain counsel, particularly since this issue so far has been to bankruptcy court, district court, back to bankruptcy court, back to district court, to the Court of Appeals, and now to this court. So we and he thought it was time that this issue become clarified, so our office agreed to assist him with regard to the briefing and argument of this matter. It's obvious that I think both with regard to the appellants and the appellees, we're arguing about more than who's going to get $45,000 in this case. We're arguing about whether or not aggressive collection creditors can obtain a secret lien that they can use either in bankruptcy or otherwise to claim all of the proceeds of any judgment debtor and not have to share with anybody, as long as they can do it outside the 90-day time period.
Counsel, I asked opposition the same question on a secret lien. Now, according to his explanation, first of all, you have a lawsuit that certainly is public. Here you've got a judgment. You then have a court proceeding. What is secret about this lien?
Well, what's secret about it is there's no specific place where you can go and look at it. With regard to a judgment, for example, you can go to the various counties and search the judgment index and find a judgment. There's no indication anywhere of any kind of similar index for appointment of supplemental receivers. They're not required to file that anywhere.
But they've got a judgment, so that at least...
They have a judgment, and in theory, you could search each individual file. And assuming...
But wait a minute. If they
have a judgment.
If I recall how they do this... You don't go into each file. You have a judgment docket.
Yes.
And you look at the docket, and you take it. I mean, it's not something, and people do that on a regular basis.
Yes.
I understand. So if someone took a judgment, say, up in Washira County, which is not a metropolis, certainly someone could find that out. Or if they took it in Milwaukee County, someone could find it out, particularly if Fort Badger Lines was doing business in that area, correct?
Yes, they could.
All right. So
it's not secret in terms of a secret conspiratorial kind of thing. An extremely diligent person could go back far enough, assuming that the order to appear for examination and the order appointing the trustee were timely filed, and find that on the docket.
And how long would it take you to check 30 counties?
You couldn't.
Why not?
I mean, you could.
You'd have to travel. No central dockets.
No central dockets.
You can't use CCAP information.
No. And the...
You have to physically go
you
or
would
physically
have to.
Pay the clerk of court to check it.
Well, you could I think you could do it yourself in those counties that have the index, and I think they all have the index. But you'd have to find someone. We'd probably find someone to pay to do that.
Well, Mr. Burns, to follow up Justice Wilcox's question, and I too admit I know nothing about bankruptcy law, so help me if I don't use the correct terms. I understand your solution, or what you are asking for, is that this does not become perfected until a receiver is appointed and or there's some kind of turnover, which you say occurred on December 17th.
Well, that solution will resolve this case, according to what the Seventh Circuit said.
Okay, but would that solution resolve what... How would that solution resolve what you say is the problem with Mr. Mann's proposal?
It won't.
I didn't think...
And that's why I think that if you agree with us that some kind of perfection is required, you will have answered the Seventh Circuit's question. But you'll be back hearing this issue in a somewhat different format in the future, because someone's going to come back again and argue with you about the existence of the lien, because...
Well, excuse me for interrupting.
Sure.
If your solution does not do any better than his solution with respect to secret liens, then what public policy argument do you have to support this December 17th date as opposed to his October 30th date?
Well, the December 17th date, if you're looking at it strictly from the legal analysis, I think is in accord with the Wisconsin Supreme Court cases we had in our brief that at least allude to the fact that there's some step other than serving the order to appear for examination. But from a more general standpoint, it won't solve it. That's where Mr. Mann correctly stated our view, that we think if there continues to be a lien, which I think is not a wise public policy, although it is in accord with the longstanding Wisconsin practice, possession should be required. So that if a by the supplemental receiver. So that if the supplemental receiver actually goes out and commences his activities to attach assets and takes them into his lawful possession, then there are other areas of law where possession is perfection.
Let me just mention, okay, so now we've got the additional hearing. You've got the receiver taking possession. I know as a practical matter, and having been a trial judge, that there's a big difference between allowing the receiver to, here's the order for possession, now he's got to go out, the sheriff or someone has to, quote, attach, take possession of the property, and that takes time also. In other words, I think that it would be fair to say it could take anywhere from days to weeks to a couple months to get possession of the property because it isn't always known where it is. So it isn't the receiver, as I recall, and you can correct me, going out there and actually collecting it himself. He usually has someone like the sheriff's office or someone like that.
Yes, on physical assets,
right.
That is true. On bank accounts and accounts receivable and things of that type, so, the receiver is more likely to do it personally.
So what I'm saying is that if we say possession, then what is possession? Is possession being that the referee or the receiver strike that gets the possession order? Is it actually physically taking possession of the Caterpillar or the truck or the eight tractors or anything like that? And that just brings up another concern, which I would say has to do with the word perfection.
There's always going to be some other concern.
All right.
And I don't claim to be...
Nothing's really perfect, in other words.
No, and I don't claim to be the expert. I don't claim to be the expert on what constitutes legal possession of an asset under Wisconsin law. But I can tell you, whatever it is more than what's required according to the appellant's view.
And your position then is that if somebody other than the debtor has possession, it puts everybody on notice, and therefore it's perfected.
Better notice than they have now.
I thought that your position was, first of all, there are two questions that were certified, actually. The first one was, does Wisconsin law require a lien to be perfected, a lien under these circumstances? And your position, I take it, is yes.
Yes.
And the second question is, if so, how is the lien to be perfected? And I thought that your position with respect to that second question, that it was perfected by appointing a receiver.
That is the ruling that Judge Shapiro made that was affirmed by Judge Gordon. See, the point of that is they didn't, from a legal standpoint, if that is so, that answered this question. And they didn't, were not called on to go further with regard to the public policy issue of other kinds of perfection. And the point of this kind of lien that Mr. Mann sort of skirted around is that this is not a statutory lien. There's no statute that says a supplemental receiver has a lien, unlike the lien that you get by docketing a judgment against real estate. That's clear. We wouldn't come to you and say, you don't have to docket it. That's a matter of statute. Here we have a lien that was created by common law over 100 years ago when the commercial affairs of the country and the state were considerably different than they are now. And the ability to transfer property around was more difficult because people did not have as many multi-county or multi-state ownership of property as they do now.
Counsel, as I see it, we have thus far three dates. We have October 30th, which is service of the order for appearance. And I have some problems with that date because I have concerns of we don't have to file it, who's going to know it. We have a date of December 17th, which is the order for appointment of receiver. And that seems to me to be a little bit more finite because you have a judicial authority judge signing an order for appointment of receiver, you know, after a hearing. There's been a hearing, there's a record. This is more finite than this whenever the person was served. And now we have a third date of taking possession, which also seems to me to be kind of indefinite. You know, Justice Wilcox talks about the getting the caterpillar. I had a case involving cows. You know, they're going to hide the cows. Where are they going to find the cows? And how many cows are they going to find? That seems a bit indefinite, too. And if it seems to me that finding a definite date that can be of notice to people is a goal here. And if so, then arguably the December 17th date is the best. How do you respond to that? Number one, am I right that we have a goal here? We have three dates, and we want to choose the one that gives the most notice and is the most definite in time.
Can I back up for your
sure.
question for just a moment? Because there's one other issue that I want to point out before I'm done today, and that is there's no requirement that because you have an order to appear for examination that you automatically have a supplemental receiver appointed. So, not only in theory, but in fact, a person can have the debtor appear for examination and wait around 6 months or a year before they get a supplemental receiver. According to the appellant's theory, you can wait around as long as you want. Other creditors can go out and attempt to recover assets from the same judgment debtor, and if you see them making progress, you go get your supplemental receiver and you say, oh, by the way, my lien starts back on that date back a year ago, even though I haven't done anything in the meantime. And thanks a lot for your help. Please turn over all the proceeds of your garnishments because I had a lien.
A year ago, you're talking about the date of service or the date of the order of appointment?
The date of service.
Okay, but so I mean, I'm advocating that the most certain in time with the most notice is December 17th.
Well, it's certain in time because it's going to be a matter of public record somewhere. Any date, as you pointed out, is going to create some problems. Because then the question is, for those who don't know and continue to act, they're still going to be out of luck when they find out that in some county somewhere, a receiver was appointed who's going to claim a lien, even though he took no action to recover the property. At least if you had possession of the property, those who went out and acted on their own to collect judgments would be protected from an unknown receiver coming around later and saying, oh, by the way, I had a lien that predates your collection activity.
Mr. Burns, can you point us to any Wisconsin case law that would justify us setting the date for perfection as the date of possession? Is there anything that you can point to that would justify us in doing that other than your policy arguments?
No. I mean, there aren't any cases on this. The cases we cite, I admit they don't seem to require perfection. The cases they cite, at least the cases that are less than 100 years old, that say they're a lien, in my opinion, assume there's a lien and argue from that stand, from that point forward. They do not address, you know, yes, we've reviewed this after 100 years, it's still a good idea. And I think whether you're going to do that in this case or in some later case, the creation of this, an existence of this lien, and whether it has to be perfected is pretty critical to collection practice. And it just so happens that it rose in this circumstance in the context of a bankruptcy, and that the finite issue because of the bankruptcy and the 90-day question is resolved if you pick the date of the appointment of the receiver, because they can't beat that date.
Well, I know Judge Gordon relied on New York law as well. Is New York law at all helpful in setting a possession date?
If it was that clear, we would have had it in our brief.
That doesn't surprise me.
And one of the things that apparently is clear about New York law is that perfection is the date of the appointment of receiver. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
And it seems, in my reading of the, looking at the cases and reviewing the argument, it is this reliance on New York law, which is the basis of some of the opinions and apparently the basis of the law that we have developed here in Wisconsin. So it seems to me in some ways you can win the battle but lose the war. You can win the battle and say, look, New York requires that there be perfection, and that the perfection is the date of appointment of receiver. But then New York law also goes on to relate back, and it says, but for effective purposes, we relate back to the date of service of the order. So it seems to me that you want some New York law, but not all New York law, because if you take all New York law, your opponent prevails.
Well, the Seventh Circuit did not adopt that argument.
This Neptune case, I think this is Judge Reynolds. Is this the most recent? What's the date?
They rejected the relation back argument because if they had accepted it, they would not have certified the issue to you as to whether or not perfection is required. My understanding.
I ask you, Mr. Berg, situations where we're dealing with real property. Did I understand this command to say that a lien is perfected when a judgment is taken?
No, when it's docketed.
When it's docketed.
Correct.
When the judgment is docketed.
When the judgment is docketed.
Why is that? Why is it perfected then?
Because the state statutes say so.
Yeah. In Wisconsin is a recording state too, so once you docket it, it's available too. I mean, it's available for inspection, and where people will find it. But I'm trying to, you know, since this obviously is a quote case of first impression, since there's I'm trying to think of a better policy, because you know you don't know how much these assets are worth until you marshal them. They have, you know, if Justice Bradley used the example of cows. Well, if there are going to be 10 cows, and what kind of cows are they, and the value, there's a lot of difference. So if someone is marshaling or getting these assets together, is it bad policy, basically, to have other people? I mean, no one knows what these assets are worth. I don't think anyone can say, well, you've got a caterpillar, two cows, and three tractors, and it's worth $25,000. It may be worth much more or much less. Is there a policy, a bad, from a public policy standpoint, what you seem to be saying is that you want notice, you think other creditors should be given notice, and that's why you prefer the appointment of, or, you know, appointment receiver date would be better than going back to...
Well, I prefer no lien or possession.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think from a public policy standpoint, with regard to execution on personal property, the legislature created a number of statutes. And it, in essence, says, go collect them. The person who's there first collects them.
Mm-hmm.
The exception to that rule, for want of a better phrase, the joker in the deck, is the supplemental receiver, who can come in contrary to a person who has lawfully used all the rest of the collection techniques, specifically authorized by statute, and say those don't make any difference. I had a lien, and my lien dates back to way back when we called the judgment debtor in to talk. The other problem with this, in terms of the practical aspects of it, is despite what cases like Candy v. Egan say in terms of the fact that when he's appointed, they're supposed to identify specific property, that doesn't happen. You fill out, there's a form, and you type in the supplemental receiver's name, and it says he's allowed to go out and get anything you can think of. So I think the cases that refer to identifying particular property sort of hint along the lines I'm talking about, which is, if not possession, at least direction to some specific item, rather than you're ahead of anybody for all time when they come after you. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burns. Mr. Gurdich, is that how you pronounce your name?
Gurdich.
Thank you. You will be doing the rebuttal.
Pardon?
You will be doing the rebuttal.
Yes, that's correct.
And you're in the same firm as Mr. Mann.
That's correct.
Okay.
May it please the court. First, I would like to urge the court not to look to New York law at all. As Mr. Mann explained, Wisconsin adopted its laws in 1849, 1850. In 1860, New York made substantial revisions. Also, before even New York revised their laws, they weren't the same as Wisconsin. As we understand New York law, before even they made the revisions, the service of what they called a third-party order did not create a lien in behalf of the creditor, whereas our supplemental order, the order to appear when served upon the debtor under Kellogg, establishes the lien. New York law changed their law in 1880 to provide for the appointment of the receiver and creating some concept of relation back, but it also gave title to the receiver. The receiver got title of the debtor's assets, which Candy v. Egan explains is not the law in Wisconsin. So there's really no corollary between the two, and I urge the court not to look to it at all, because I believe it would just create a very dangerous situation, which would just open up Pandora's box of uncertainty in judgment collection procedures in Wisconsin. I also urge the court to note that there have only been a few cases before this court on the issues of the supplementary order and the receiver. And I think that is proof in and of itself that the system works just fine the way it is. We have to focus on who are we trying to protect. We are not talking about a judgment creditor against a secured creditor. The UCC takes care of that. We're not talking about the judgment creditor versus somebody who buys assets in good faith for consideration. We're talking about judgment creditor versus judgment creditor. We have to look at the Bankruptcy Code section 547 EB1, or it might be 1B. That defines perfection for our purposes, and it says that perfection is the point at which a creditor on a simple contract cannot take a judicial lien or a lien superior to the transferee. And Alexander versus Wall bears this out. They point out in that decision that the trustee in bankruptcy is simply a judgment creditor, a hypothetical judgment creditor. And so what we're talking about is Emerald Leasing having served its order to appear, establishing its lien under Kellogg, well before the 90-day preference period. The bankruptcy is commenced, the trustee standing in the shoes of this hypothetical judgment creditor 90 days out, but after the service of the order, and the simple question is, can this hypothetical lien creditor take a lien superior to Emerald's? And I think that the decision of Kellogg is quite clear. No, it's not possible. And it works fine. The idea of somebody serving the debtor with an order to appear and not doing anything is, while in theory a problem, in reality, if other creditors are pursuing that debtor and the first serving debtor creditor does not do anything, they have the opportunity to go to the court commissioner and the courts to say that this is not being pursued in due diligence and have that lien removed, because that is the law in Wisconsin, still as set forth in Kellogg. So, it's a question of who are you trying to protect here? And in the context of enforcement of judicial liens, the process takes care of itself. The creditors who are pursuing this debtor are going to meet up with each other. And they're going to compare who served this fellow first with a sub to appear. And the one who first served the debtor has the prior lien. And the other creditors know this. And then they just follow up to make sure he's pursuing his claim. If he doesn't, they have the opportunity to go to the circuit court or the court commissioner and say he's not pursuing due diligence and protect themselves in that regard. But also, Your Honors, once that order is served, the priorities essentially are established by the creditors. The first serving judgment debtor has then the opportunity to not pursue a receiver, go to the debtor at the examination, say, look, we can take care of this thing voluntarily. I don't have to institute a disruptive receiver, take care of my claim, and then the next creditor will come along. Okay, but in the meantime, he's protected. If this court decides that something more than service of the order to appear, for instance, service of the order for receiver, or a turnover order is required, then every judgment creditor is going to have to go straight to a receiver. No deals with the debtor. They're going to have to liquidate him as fast as he can. Those are some of the policies I think the Ninth Circuit in the Hildy decision was pointing out in its explanation. So it's really, from our perspective, Your Honors, a simple situation. Thank you.
Did you finish your sentence?
You said it's a
simple situation.
It's for the judgment creditor, it's simple. The first to serve has the priority lien. And once that's established, the no other subsequent creditor can take the, prior position. And so the answer, we believe, to the certified question is no, no further step is needed. No perfection in terms of another step is needed. It's simply the service of the order. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That ends our hearings for today and our hearings on this case. Thank you. We are in recess until 9:45 tomorrow.
Thank you.